Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Cynical Michael Savage, the Friday edition. Back from a day of rest. Another day of rest. So the war goes on. The war between the fanatics on the Islamic side, who are taking us down with 1,000 slashes, and a president in the White House who is in a state of Islamic denial. Turn off the music. Washington Times editorial, Obama's state of Islamic denial, note to Barack, Allahu Akbar is a Muslim war cry. U.S. troops are gunned down by a shooter who screams Allahu Akbar before opening fire. Official statements are rushed out. The perpetrator was a lone wolf. His motive was unclear. There are no links to terrorism. Now, of course, in Europe, they're calling it an act of terror. But not in America. When Islam is the cause of American tragedy, President Obama hides his head in the sand. As you know, Wednesday, a young Muslim named Arif Uka opened fire on a busload of U.S. Air Force personnel who were unarmed, by the way. Think about that. U.S. military on a bus without weapons, unarmed, and this piece of human trash. I hope he gets 72 virgins with syphilis in heaven or wherever they go. I hope he goes to 72 virgins with syphilis. He opens fire on them. He shouts, Allahu Akbar, empties his pistol and screams jihad, jihad, and he's tackled by German police. Uka's victims have been heading to the war zone. Frankfurt shooting is the latest in a troubling series of jihadist terror attacks in which Obama refuses to face reality. Not the first, of course. The first was the June 1, 2009 shooting at a recruiting station in Little Rock when Abdul Hakim Mujahid Muhammad, a Muslim convert who had recently traveled to Yemen, killed one U.S. Army recruiter and wounded another. Muhammad told police if other troops had been available, he would have killed them too. The White House waited 2 days before making a statement that omitted any reference to the attacker or his jihadist motives. On November 5, 2009, Fort Hood massacre, 14 killed, 30 wounded by Muslim Major Nadal Hassan, whitewashed from the by the Obama administration. First coat of whitewash applied with initial statements that the shooter Hassan Nidal Malik Hassan was a lone wolf. And this lie continued through the Comprehensive Force Protection Review by the deadbeats in the military that omitted any reference to Hassan's jihadist motives or contacts with al-Qaeda. December 25, 2009, attempted underwear bomb attack on Northwest Flight 253. Al-Qaeda-linked bomber Umar Farouk Abdul Matalabab was initially not even charged with attempting to commit an act of terrorism. Faisal Shahzad also attempted the Times Square bombing in May of 2010. He was also called a lone wolf. No ties to terrorism, even described more as a victim of the economic downturn than a committed Islamic extremist. In all these cases, the initial assessments turn out to be wrong. Yet the White House still obstinately refuses to discuss the jihadist motives of the terrorists involved. That's what's going on. How many Americans have to die before Mr. Obama at long last admits the nature of the Islamist threat that killed them? And now to our southern border. ICE agent killed 2 weeks ago by Mexican drug cartels. ICE agent was forced to use a beanbag, unarmed. Beanbag, they killed him with an AK-47. Yesterday, the president met the so-called president of Mexico, where it was discussed as to whether our agents will be able to be armed. Guess what the result was? No arms for our agents on the border. They will continue to shoot beanbags at Mexican drug cartel members. And oh, by the way, yesterday Obama, with the stroke of a pen, opened up every highway in America to trucks from Mexico. Trucks from Mexico that will not be inspected, all part of Bill Clinton's NAFTA
Remember NAFTA, how we opposed it here on the Savage Nation? In the midst of a drug war, in the midst of a wave of human beings that are sweeping across America like locusts, flooding into our schools and hospitals, further bankrupting us, you think it makes sense to let trucks come in from Mexico without inspection? Take it up to your friend up there in the White House. There's number two. Now, the Europeans are calling the jihadist attack what it is, an act of Islamic terror. Not Mr. Obama. And where is our Secretary of State? Get ready for it. You're not going to believe it time on the Savage Nation. You're not going to believe this because she's praising Al Jazeera. She says it's real news, and she says it's better than our television. This is Hillary Clinton, but hold it now. Listen to clip two, not one, two.
Viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, you know, is not particularly informative to us, let alone foreigners.
That's right. We don't want any discussion. Not in Hillary Clinton's universe. There should be no arguments between talking heads because in Maoist China, there was no argument. It was the party line. There's Hillary Clinton for you. Communist, Leninist, world globalist, praising Al Jazeera because there's no argument, no discussion, and no commercials. Just 24/7 Arab propaganda. That's her cup of tea. Any other questions? I got the answers. So we're fighting a war for our survival, and unfortunately, there's no one at the helm. Or you could argue that the person at the helm is on the other side. You could even argue that if they're not at the helm defending us and calling the enemy like it is, then they may as well be working for the other team. You could take it either way. Either way, it doesn't add up. Who is at the helm? Answer, nobody. Or who is at the helm? Answer, jihadists with their stooges in the White House. You have no other answer for you. Either they're jihadists, jihadist sympathizers, or completely incompetent morons. And it's only Friday already. And the phone number is 1-800-449-8255. Now, since it's Friday, and on Friday I like to do a little bit of, spirituality, religion, I'm going to give you a one-liner, no Bible reading. I'm going to boil it down for you. Remember I told you that when I was young and looking for the answer, I met an old man who said to me, "I don't know anything about religion," said the old blind man from Holland. On the ship I was on, he said with his blind blue eyes as he looked up at me, he says, "I don't know about God." He says to me, "Religion boils down to do unto others as you will have them do unto you." He said, "That works for me." And I've heard that, and I thought that was a good one. If everyone followed it, we'd be in a better world. But I heard another way the other night from another religious man, and he was a Jewish mystical rabbi, and he said, "Either you're moving closer to God or you're moving away from God. In every act that you do each day, just ask yourself one question, and it'll set you on the right course." All you have to do is ask yourself one question, because if you say, "Do unto others as you have them do unto you," that's kind of esoteric. It's like, you're not going to lie, cheat, steal. More or less, you know not to do that, or you try not to do it. I don't know if you do. Well, we all try not to, right? We try not to. We don't achieve it, because we're man. We're not God. But when you say to yourself, let's say you're about to do something. You say, "Am I moving closer to God, or am I moving away from God?" That's all there is to it. I want you to try that on for 24 or 48 hours and get back to me on Monday. Take that with two aspirins and call me. The next time you have a desire to do something that you know is wrong, or you're not sure if it's right, ask yourself one question. Say to yourself, "Am I moving closer to God in this act or with this act? Or am I moving further away from God with this act?" That's all. See how that works. And if it works, good luck. I'm glad. 1-800-449-8255. Many, many topics to talk about on the Savage Nation. I think we've touched on some of them, including the astonishing soundbite of Hillary Clinton praising Al Jazeera and calling it real news. Listen to it again, clip two. You're not going to believe it.
Viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, you know, is not particularly informative to us, let alone foreigners.
No, it's not informative to Leninists because arguments don't occur in Lenin's universe. Arguments are bad to Hillary Clinton. You understand how this operates. Did you get the picture, or you don't figure it out yet, you Leninist fascist, you? You left-wing Leninist fascist. You don't understand that you're on the wrong side of history? All your leftists don't realize you become the Nazis that you hated? You haven't figured it out yet? I'll help you figure it out every day. That's all. Arkansas Dave, you're on the Savage Nation. Stop it, please.
the topic is that should the United States ever have a tremendous lack of oil and be almost at war with the rest of the world, we have two neighbors who have all the raw materials we need, oil and everything else. That's Mexico and Canada. Now, NAFTA.
Wait, hold on. When have you last heard Mexico give us a free barrel of oil?
Well, no, I'm talking about the situation when we finally need to have oil nearby besides our
coal. You mean we don't need it now? We don't need Mexico's oil reserves, which I think is the fourth largest in the world? I have been calling for one barrel of oil per illegal per month for about 6 years now. Why don't we demand that Mexico give us free oil to pay for the illegal aliens and their social costs? Why is that a bad idea? What do you mean? Why are we waiting for it? Oil's $114 a barrel now, isn't it?
Right, but Mexico can deal with the rest of the world. I'm assuming that if there's a problem where the United States cannot get oil anywhere else, we have two neighbors who can supply us with oil because the situation will have changed by then.
But why do you assume they will supply us with oil? Where have you read that Mexico's our friend?
Well, then if we do without Mexico, we have Canada, and I'm pretty sure Canada is a fairly good friend.
Okay, I would say that the alliance between the U.S. and Canada is a solid one. But again, I want to go back to Mexico, which is sitting on one of the largest oil reserves in the world. Why is the U.S. government not demanding free oil from Mexico at the rate of one barrel per illegal per month until the 30 million illegal aliens and their costs are paid for with oil? I don't think that's a bad idea, do you?
It's never been proposed. I can't see why.
I proposed it in my book. I proposed it in Trickle Up Poverty. I proposed it first in Liberalism as a Mental Disorder. How come no one has run with that idea? I'll tell you the answer why. Because the government fundamentally is a group of lobbyists. They're not leaders. Do you understand they're put in by interests other than the people of the United States of America? There are business interests that put our politicians in office, all right? So once you accept that as the correct view of things, that politicians are put there by business interests, you come to understand that the Seven Sister Oil Companies are a cartel, and they don't want oil coming in from Mexico for free. They want to roll us over the barrel and charge us $10 a gallon. It's as simple as that.
Yeah, well, they're setting a world price. They're charging everybody $10 a gallon.
Right. Why should we pay it when Mexico's been sucking us dry by dumping the poorest of their poor on our shores where they're getting free schooling, free medication, free this and free that? Why shouldn't we demand reparations from Mexico through their oil right now?
Well, we can't. If we did demand it, they're not doing it. But we have our own supplies of oil in the Gulf of Mexico. 12?
Correct. And who locked up the supplies in the Gulf of Mexico?
The oil cartel.
No. President Barack Obama has used the Gulf oil spill as a pretext to stop drilling in the Gulf of Mexico. And all the while, foreign drillers have been drilling away. They've never stopped for one day. Don't you see what Obama's doing to us in this country?
We already have 10,000 wells in the Gulf that are producing oil. We don't have enough refining capability.
That's not exactly true, because I got drillers calling the show every week, every day, demanding that there be more drilling. Why is he permitting foreign companies to drill and not permitting American companies to look for new wells?
Well, I don't think he's talking about the American outer limits. They're in the Gulf of Mexico outside the U.S. boundaries.
And that's correct. So in other words, he only asserts his authority over those within U.S. boundaries.
Once he can, for reasons of his own.
Well, you wouldn't say that he's doing it for altruistic reasons, would you?
Well, he's not. And either are the oil cartels. They've always...
All right. So they're on the same side. That's what I said. He was put in power by numerous factions, and one of them were the oil cartels.
Cartel's main aim was to sell oil in those parts of the world where it was least stable.
All right, well, we're getting off the track. Oil is going through the ceiling. My primary point is Mexico is swimming. Mexico is over a sea of oil. They're hardly exploiting it. You've got Pemex. I don't know who else is drilling there. But you realize that they could build a pipeline for Mexico. You don't even need ships to bring it in. And they could pipe it across the border right into Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and California. You're aware of that, aren't you?
And what people don't know is the oil that was from Alaska was going to Japan. None of it ever came to the United States.
Well, there you go. There you go. Heart attack on a stick. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Well, that'll be the know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I
it is Rock and Roll Friday in the Savage Nation. Songs that will not be played in Al Jazeera. Songs for the infidel. Songs for the infidel on the Savage Nation. Welcome to Infidel Rock and Roll Friday.
Well, that'll be the day when you say goodbye.
The true sound of America.
The day when you made me cry, you say you're gonna leave. You know it's a lie, cause that'll be the day when I die.
Buddy Holly and the Crickets, some of the best infidels I've ever heard. Actually, let's go to the next one, Phil. Let's play Little Star by the Elegants. They were also great infidels. Let's hear Little Star by the Elegants.
Where are you, little star? Where are you?
Maybe 58, 59, Impala. Corvette with the inset. Twin four-barrel carbs. You couldn't have it. You rode the bus. The rich kids had the vet. They're dead, you're alive. Well, when Hillary Clinton finally puts a stop to talk radio, which is her long-term goal, since she loves... no arguments between talking heads like what we do in our news, which is not informative at all. She doesn't understand that the argument is the whole core of the truth. She thinks that government-controlled propaganda like of the type you find in Al Jazeera is real news around the clock. Listen to the schoolgirl in clip two. This is Hillary Clinton's schoolgirl.
Viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which is not...
I'm on over, baby. Yes, I say, come on over, baby. Baby, you can't go wrong. We ain't faking it. Oh, a lot of shaking going on. Well, I say, come on over, baby.
We are listening to one of the great infidels of all time, Jerry Lee Lewis and the Savage Nation. This is Infidel Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Music that will definitely not be played on Hillary Clinton's favorite channel, Al Jazeera. Do you realize that we have a government that is completely, totally, and absolutely disconnected from the people? Stop for a minute. Now, it's always been true that a government is separate from the people. A government is the government, the people are the people, and there's some accord, and there's some disagreements. But never in my lifetime, and I'll be 69 March 31st, have I ever seen a government that specifically spites the people on a daily basis, as does the Obama-Clinton government. Have you ever heard, could you ever name, could you ever believe that you'd see a day that a Secretary of State would praise an Arab propaganda channel and call it honest news, and at the same time put down capitalist news, meaning news that's supported by ads, as we have in this country? There's something's wrong with commercials. So in other words, NPR is better than what you're listening to because it's run by a bunch of individuals who've never worked a day in their life on NPR. They should be defunded. She loves NPR. She loves Al Jazeera. She loves anything the government controls. It doesn't even matter if it's a foreign government, because to her, there is no such thing as a foreign government. In other words, to a government hack like Hillary Clinton, any government is better than the people it's supposed to serve. Any government is better than the people. The people don't exist. They're peons. They're peasants. So to her, what's the difference if it's Al Jazeera, a government propaganda channel? Listen to it again if you missed it. I want you to listen closely now. This is your Secretary of State calling Al Jazeera real news.
Viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, you know, is not particularly informative to us, let alone foreigners.
Not informative to us? You mean argument is foreign to you because you're a dictator, Hillary? Is that what you mean? You're saying arguments are not informative to you because you don't have any arguments. You don't permit any arguments. You permit no criticism. You run the State Department like a little dictatorship. In other words, a fiefdom. So, of course, you don't like arguments between talking heads. You know, there's a type of argument that's known as a dialectic. And a dialectic is an argument. It was developed by the Greeks. An argument is used to arrive at the truth, by the way, in case you don't know it. Argument is actually a tool that is used to arrive at the truth. And if Hillary Clinton didn't learn that when she was at college, what did she learn, I'd like to understand? So here she is praising Al Jazeera. It's hard to believe. This is unbelievable to me. New York City, Leona, welcome from WOR land. What's on your mind, Leona?
Hillary Clinton, she is an educated woman, I presume. I know she is. Well.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, what I'm trying to say is, she says it's real news. You may not agree with it. If it's news, you don't agree or not agree. News is news.
Oh, you caught her in that one, Leona. Yeah. But she was saying it doesn't have commercials. That's evil to her. And no arguments between talking heads like we do on our news, which she says is not informative.
Well, it's informative to me, but that's another subject. Well, anyway, news is news is news. You don't agree?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. What is news? Isn't all news biased? Let me give an example. Muslim goes up and screams Allah Akbar and shoots unarmed American servicemen on a bus. What's the news of that story? Is it a man shoots American servicemen? Is it U.S. airmen involved in shooting, as AP wrote it? Listen to me. The headline from Associated Press, I swear to God, was U.S. airmen involved in shooting. Is that the news? What's the news? Or is the news radical jihadist opens fire on American troops, screams Allah Akbar? What would you say the news of that story is?
News is that American men were shot, killed.
By who? It has nothing to do with Islam?
Yes, by whoever it was who committed the crime.
Well, the Germans are calling it an act of terrorism, but not our government. So what I'm getting at is, what is news? News is also a question of subjectivity.
By the editors and those who prepare the
That's
news.
Correct. In essence, look, I am not a newsman. I'm an opinion man. We agree on that, right, Leona? I don't write the news. I don't investigate the news. I report on news stories with my own view of it, correct?
Yes, you have a byline.
I have a byline. So I put my own headlines on the news. I use my own particular view of the world, and I impose it upon the news. You would say that that's biased. It's not the news. Well, what is the news? The way it's put forward by liberals, where they completely and overtly, in every case, distort the news to copy their own agenda?
That does happen.
All right, you get the point. So, you know, what's subjective and what's objective is the question. How do you see, I know how to load up the calls, and I've got loads on a Friday, so I'm going to do it in a while. I'm not ready for it right now. I was off yesterday from exhaustion, and now I'm back already. I tried the religion. It went over like Hillary Clinton on ice skates. I thought it was a good line. Either you're moving closer to God or away from God. It really worked for me today. See, we all have desires that we know are wrong, right? I don't care whether it's eating Haagen-Dazs or... did you read about that fat guy, 575 pounds, who died from a heart attack? Blair River, 575-pound spokesman for Heart Attack Grill in Arizona, dies at age 29. They say they don't know what he died from. What do you mean they don't know what he died from? This is like saying we don't know if there's terrorism involved in Allah Akbar in the shooting of the airmen. The nearly 600-pound man who gained fame as spokesman for the Heart Attack Grill, a Phoenix-area restaurant that prides itself on serving excessively unhealthy food, dropped dead at the age of 29, and they say the cause is unknown. That sounds like an Obama decision. In other words, the Obama medical director, whatever he's called, do we have one? Like a Jocelyn Elders? Who's the latest lunatic with a stethoscope? The craziest one, by the way, a surgeon general, if you have a surgeon general. Believe me, if you wanted an operation, you wouldn't want the Surgeon General to do it. Jocelyn Elders was not the craziest one. The biggest crackpot in history was Koop. You talk about a lunatic, in my estimation. So this guy dies. He's 6'8", 575 pounds. And he opens he's involved with a restaurant called the Heart Attack Grill. And in this restaurant, scantily clad women dressed as nurses serve its customers high-caloric food. The menu touts its 8,000-calorie quadruple bypass burger, flat line of fries, fried in pure lard, a butterfat shake, and no filter cigarettes. Now, of course you're going to get sick if you eat like that. He died. You hear this? He died from the food he was touting. You can't see the connection? I can. I wouldn't eat that disgusting garbage like that. I mean, forget about obesity. You're talking about clogging your arteries. It's like the world's most unhealthy diet. How would you like a deep-fried butter dessert? Corn dog pizza? Who eats food like this? All right, so the guy's dead, so what's the point I'm making? Nothing. There is no point. I thought I'd throw the story in before we play the next piece of infidel rock and roll, which is going to be either In the Still of the Night by the Five Statins. They used to be known in the 50s as the Five Satins. But since we're doing a health-related topic, we're going to rename them the Five Statins. A whole different world. Did you see what went on at Yale? The sex party, the naked sex party? You know, okay, but this is music from my teenage years in the still of the night. Looking back, it was so innocent, as may as well have been Victorian England. Can you imagine dancing in a finished basement with a girl till your heart pounded almost out of your chest? That was the exciting moment in junior high school. Now compare what they do now at Yale University. Did you see the story or not? Did I get it up yet on Michael Savage? They can't hear me. Don't you understand you can't mix the sound? Either cut that off or cut me off. Let's go to the story about Yale. I want you to see what Obama's alma mater is doing now. Now, Yale is the same school that produced Obama. This is what Yale has become. You know, I've called these places institutions of lower living for years. Most of you understand the joke, and you've enjoyed it. But there's no better example of what Yale and Harvard and these degenerate schools have become than the story I'm about to tell you. Naked party at Yale prompts sexual assault investigation. Naked party at Yale prompts sexual assault investigation. So there's a naked party at Yale. And what happens? Yale's private society prank group called the Pundits throws a party by invitation only. People arrive in costume. They're told to disrobe through the halfway through the party. And in the party, there's underage students who are drinking. Attendees were told it was a ritual to join the Pundits. After the attendees at the Yale party disrobe, several of them were forced to kiss each other by members of the Pundits. One male attendee reportedly had a penis forcibly pushed against his face. Now, do you think that this country is going to survive with the degenerates running the colleges today? When these low-life, degenerate snot noses are going to be running our banks and corporations in a few years, sitting in state houses on Capitol Hill like Obama is, tell me, I'm asking you something. Do you think that this country can survive with degeneracy like this at Yale University? No. The answer is the worst thing you could ever do for your child is send him to Harvard or Yale. The worst thing you could do is aspire to Harvard or Yale. That's something only an immigrant off the boat wants for their child. I don't know if you understand this. No one's ever said this. I'm a highly educated man, but I will tell you this. The people who want their children to go to Harvard most are usually illiterate peasants who made a fortune in America. That's all they want is their child to go to Harvard or Yale. I think it's somehow a golden road. It's the golden road to degeneracy and destruction of a human being. You're far better off sending your child to a state university where they might meet somebody who works after school, by the way. I'm not going to get personal, but I went to a city university. Then I went to a state college. Then I went to a state graduate school, as did my children. And everybody did very well because everybody learned to work. They learned the value of work. What does anyone learn at Harvard or Yale? How to rob people and call it gravy? Do you know anyone who's come out of Harvard or Yale has done anything good for America? Can you name one person who went to Harvard or Yale who has done anything altruistic for the United States of America? I'm sure there are some. I'm talking about in this last 10 years. Name one person who went to Harvard or Yale who's contributed to this society. Usually they come out as the worst scoundrels on the planet. All they learn how to do is rob people. I knew somebody who went to Harvard Law School, a distant member of the family. You know what they taught this wretch in her last year at Harvard Law? I'm not making this true story. This wretch in our family, distant relative, went to Harvard Law. In her last year of Harvard Law, you know what her professor taught her? Look within your family for your first lawsuit. I'll be right back.
Savage. It's a boom and a boom, 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 ding, dong, ding, dong, a lang, a lang, a lang, a wop, wop, bip, a bip, a rob, a dip, oh, life could be a dream.
It is Infidel Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Now we have Shaboom by the Infidel Chords. Music that will not be played in Al Jazeera. Anyway, here we are. Here we are. Oil's $104 a barrel. I said 114. I meant 104. 29-month high. There's no reason for this. The oil hasn't been stopped. There's no flow that's been stopped. Our good friends in Saudi Arabia, who use us like Hessians, could simply open up the tap. But then again, the Seven Sisters don't want it. They want you to pay $10 a gallon for gasoline. So it's a government of the sheeple, by the sheeple, and for the sheeple. That's all. Shaboom. Sacramento, Rick, you're on the Savage Nation, KSTE. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon, Mike. I think of the movie called Wag the Tail. That is, everything is perception. They package everything, and they can't say terrorists. Because if they say terrorists, the commander-in-chief hasn't done his job. But if they don't use the word terrorist, then he's been successful during his administration.
Yeah, but how many lone wolf attacks can they think the people are gonna buy? All of them are lone wolf attacks. They all scream Allah Akbar, and they scream jihad, jihad before they're taken down. And we're supposed to think that they're lone wolves?
The only way you can defeat an enemy is you got to know the enemy inside and out. And you
That's correct. And you got to define the enemy like they've defined us. Look, even if we don't have the guts to define the enemy, all we got to go is with their definition. They have said we are their enemy. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right, so if the enemy has said we are their enemy and we don't have the brains to figure out who the enemy is, then let's go with their analysis. If all of us are their enemy, then we know who our enemy is. They've defined themselves.
Exactly. You know, I saw a documentary the other night on Jimmy Carter where Jimmy got more discouraged. Everything he tried to do to pull the country out went lower and lower. And there's a great semblance between Jimmy Carter and Barack Obama. The difference
yes.
is Barack can speak much better, but there is no performance difference. He and Jimmy Carter are just alike. And just
I don't know. I think that Obama is even a more hardcore Leninist than Jimmy Carter. And I'll tell you why. Jimmy Carter served on a nuclear submarine, and I give him great credit for that. I think he was an engineer on a submarine. He served the country very well. He was a committed leftist. That is true. But Obama is a man without a country. I think the reason I define Obama as a pan-Leninist is because he sees a world government in a Leninist fashion without borders, without nationhood. You follow me?
Yes, I do. But just like
okay, and that's why Obama's far more dangerous. And there's a reason that Obama's far more dangerous and is a man without a country. Remember, Obama, if you analyzed him from the time he was a child, and I did so for my book, Trickle Up Poverty, he originally was not particularly radical. He said that when he went to college, he decided to side with his black radical friends in order to fit in. And what he did was he picked up the entire 60s black radical mentality. He took it on whole. And while most of the folks who embraced that in the 60s have grown up, went on, moved on, done other things, Obama thinks suddenly it's 1961.
Well, the thing is that most people that came in from other countries, be it different religions or backgrounds, they all came in wanting to be Americans and blend in. The difference right now with the Muslim push, and this is the only thing I major disagree with what's going on in our country, is they're not wanting to come in and blend into being
Oh, of American. Course not. No, no, no. No matter what anybody tells you, there is no give. It's not when in Rome do as the Romans do. It's when in Rome tell the Romans to do as you do. Thank you for the call. How do you feel about Obama signing yesterday into law the permission for Mexican trucks to come into America on 6 superhighways without any inspections? You think that's a good idea? In an age of terrorism, in an age of immigrants who are coming in without papers, in an age of narco-trafficking, is that a good idea? Of course, it's insanity. Now, did you read the other story? This one shocked me yesterday. I try to stay away from the news on my day off. I don't even know if I have the strength to tell you the story. It's such a mess. What Obama's doing, whatever he touches, he ruins. Remember I told you he's like Obama the Destroyer? He's like a child who takes apart a rare watch. One after the other, he takes a watch apart and he can't put it back together again. The agency known as ATF, one of the biggest messes in history, exported machine guns, AK-47s, to Mexico. Listen to what I just said to you. They said, we're going to send all of these heavy weapons to Mexico, and we're so smart that we're going to trace them and see where they go. Agents said to their higher-up morons, don't do it. The guns are going to fall in the hands of the narco-terrorists. The idiots in Washington said, no, that's what we're doing. We're going to let the guns go into Mexico. The guns went into Mexico. They've been used by the gangs. They killed our own agents, and now they can't find the guns. This is what I'm telling you. The people running the country are well-meaning in some cases, but they're absolutely idiotic. They have no real-life experience. They're mainly from the universities. These are hardcore, committed academics. They don't know the real world. And look at what Obama and just did in the Middle East. Take a look at what he did. He set Egypt on fire. He destroyed an alliance with one of our greatest allies, Mubarak. He's now burning one country down after another. And George Soros is actually boasting that he's happy that it's happening. George Soros is now saying the bloodiest revolution of all is coming in Iran. Don't you understand what George Soros is doing? George Soros is the man behind all of this, to the best of my knowledge. I have to put a caveat in. I believe he's the one calling the shots. I believe that today, mega bankers are more powerful than nation states. And I believe that Soros is a kind of distorted, I don't know how to put it. He's sort of a distorted view of one of the greatest money changers in history. And he wants to remake the entire world without nations. He wants a world without borders. And by wrecking our alliances with the Middle East, as bad as some of these guys were, we now know Islamists are going to arise in all these states. Do you think George Soros profited on any of this chaos? I'll bet you $1 million he has.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is Infidel Rock and Roll Friday on the Savage Nation. Music that will not be played on Al Jazeera. Wreckage, wherever you turn, you can turn off the music now. We have a president in a state of Islamic denial, according to the Washington Times. We have a secretary of state in love with Al Jazeera and no arguments. Wherever you turn, you have incompetence and academic leftists ruining virtually everything they touch. I can give you one case after another, but I don't think I have the desire to do so, nor do you really need to hear it. Did you hear about the anti-gun efforts on the border and how our ATF inadvertently gave machine guns to drug cartels in Mexico? And how Eric Holder is refusing to release the documents on this case to Republican Senator Grassley? Did you hear any of this? No. What do you need to hear it for? You got your own troubles. I understand. This is the job of the newspapers, and frankly, one is doing their job, and that's, well, Fox is doing their job. Fox News website's terrific. But you have to read it. You have to have the time and the inclination to read it. Justice Department was in charge, as you know, of the ATF, and thousands of guns were sent to the drug cartels by our own government on the assumption that they would be able to trace the guns and find out who was getting them. The U.S. government allowed assault rifles to be sold to suspected straw purchasers for an illegal trafficking ring. And what happened was the agents didn't track the weapons after that. Now, who blew the lid off on this story? An agent from the ATF who said he can't hold it in anymore. He believes that it's because of his own agency. Agent Terry was killed with an assault weapon because he was forced to use a beanbag gun by Obama and Holder as opposed to a machine gun. In a separate case not connected to this agent's death, authorities are saying that a weapon purchased in October in the Dallas-Fort Worth area was used in a Feb 15th attack on two U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement agents as they drove on a highway near San Luis Potosi in Mexico, killing Yami Zapata and wounding Victor Avila. The man who bought the gun, his brother and a neighbor were part of a suspected gun trafficking ring, but the point was they bought the guns from the U.S. government through a straw man. And now we have an ATF agent coming forward and saying he can't live with himself anymore. He can't live with himself because he was screaming to the agency not to do this. He was saying, don't do this to the jerks who run the ATF, the college boys and girls, the frat boys and the sorority girls who Obama put in charge of everything, and our great Attorney General Eric Holder, who apparently answers only students' questions, doesn't answer questions that the media ask him. All right, what do you want to talk about? You can eat your heart out over all of this if you wanted to. The big shocker is Hillary Clinton going on going before a Foreign Policy Priority Committee meeting and being recorded by C-SPAN, where she calls Al Jazeera real news and bashes American news because there's too much argument. Listen to clip two.
Viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, you know, is not particularly informative to us, let alone foreigners.
No, what's informative to you is what you say. That's informative. Or what anyone in government says, you don't want any arguments between talking heads because that's a dialectic that doesn't belong in a democracy. Well, I mean in an autocracy. Well, I mean in a Hillary Clinton world. You don't want any arguments and you don't want any commercials because that's, well, tawdry. It's not PBS. PBS has no commercials, just propaganda 24/7, which is one giant commercial for the left wing. You say PBS, NPR is not commercial, not driven by commercials. It's driven by one commercial. Left-wing fanaticism 24/7. That's all. There was an article today where one of the senators said that did you hear how much money they make at NPR? Do you see the salaries, what these wonderful public servants make? Where, here, the Mint says execs of PBS and NPR make more dollars than Obama. You know how much money they make? Let's look it up for you. Here we go. Let's look at all right. President and CEO Patricia Day Stacey Harrison. Anyone with a hyphenated last name, I don't trust. Anyone who has more than one last name, I don't trust. Let's start with that. But anyway, she's an executive at the CPR, Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And the president and CEO, Patricia Day Stacey Harrison, received $298,000 in reportable compensation and another $70,000 in other compensation from the organization. Now, that's nothing compared to Kevin Close, President Emeritus of NPR, who received more than $1.2 million in compensation, according to tax forms that the nonprofit filed in 2009. $1.2 million in compensation. That's the man who's the President Emeritus of NPR. And if you think that's bad, it's worse. There's lots of money that comes from you, by the way. How bad is it? In 2001, the federal government appropriated $340 million for CPB. Last year, it got $420 million. And as Congress is looking how to close the $1.6 trillion deficit, cutting funding for this corporation has even been proposed by President Obama's Bipartisan Deficit Reduction Commission. But Obama wants to increase their budget because he loves the fact that they are slavish worshipers of his Leninism. And Sesame Street, by the way, I never let my children watch. Whenever it came on, I turned the TV off and took them out in the street. I never let them watch that propaganda, incidentally. Last year, the Open Society Foundation, backed by liberal fascist, in my opinion, George Soros, gave NPR $1.8 million to help support the latter's plan to hire an additional 100 communist reporters. When NPR receives $1 million gifts from Soros, it's an insult to taxpayers. You hear this? So that's what's going on in the country. We have meddling in the news. We have meddling on every level by individuals who are not elected by the people. And if public broadcasting can pay its presidents $500 million, $1 million salaries, while its children's programs are making hundreds of millions in sales, and liberal fanatics are willing to write millions of dollars in checks to help these organizations, there's no reason we, the taxpayers, need to subsidize them anymore. Let them compete in the marketplace. Let them do what I do, which is work for a living. Okay, 1-800-449-8255. How do you feel about Hillary Clinton praising Al Jazeera and calling it real news? How do you feel about Hillary Clinton saying that arguments between talking heads is a distraction from the real news? How do you feel about Hillary Clinton glorifying Al Jazeera? Now, I have a real treat for you coming up in this hour. It's a piece from YouTube by a former KGB agent who is explaining how he was told to subvert a country with communism. And almost everything that this former KGB agent was taught, you're going to sit there in shock to realize what's happening right in front of your nose a little later on the Savage Nation. Wait, no break, no break, no break, no break. No break. We're going to go to a caller. Max in Chicago heard me. Thanks, Max. What'd you hear me say?
Hey, Michael. Yes, thanks a lot. I can't believe Hillary. I mean, being from Chicago, I'm so disgusted that she's from Chicago. I mean, oh, my God. I'm just totally disgusted with that.
Well, she's always been sort of in a world that doesn't relate to the United States of America as an entity. But that's not what you called about, Max, is it?
No. I called about your one-line thing about religion. I love that, Michael. I'm going to do that this weekend.
Yeah, let me repeat it. I've heard it said that, put religion aside, the one golden rule is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. In other words, you wouldn't put a bomb in your neighbor's house because you wouldn't want your neighbor to put a bomb in your house, correct?
Right.
Et cetera. You wouldn't rob from your neighbor because you wouldn't want your neighbor to rob from you. It makes common sense to do that way. 99% of the world's people are like that, incidentally. But I found this following quote from a mystical Jew, someone who studied the Kabbalah. And he said, in every act that you're about to perform, whether it's eating food or brushing your teeth or in any manner of things that you could be doing, before you do it, ask yourself one question. In this act, are you moving closer to God or moving away from God, farther away from God? Because it's as simple as that. And that's an amazing way to look at the world, don't you think, Max?
Oh, I think so. That is so wonderful. That's better than the other, you know, thing. You know.
Yes, because we all let's say have a wild side. We all have desires that we have to control. It's human. It's why we're human. And some have stronger will than others. But if every time you're about to do that thing that you don't really want to do, whatever it is, smoking a cigarette or whatever you may think it may be. Ask yourself, is that moving you closer to God, or are you moving away from God and doing it? And of course, the cigarette has nothing to do with it. You know what I'm talking about. I'm talking about other things, right?
Yes, yes. Yeah, that is great.
Now, of course, to the ultra-religious, they actually ask themselves this with regard to even eating. Every bite of food they take, they're saying, let's say they're not supposed to eat pork. It's prohibited. Or shellfish. It's prohibited, right? So, in other words, if they say, who cares, I'm going to have a ham sandwich, they have to say to themselves, if I bite into that ham sandwich, am I moving closer to God or moving farther away from God? And maybe it'll stop them from eating the ham sandwich. I myself eat ham. I don't care. I mean, I'm not into food prohibitions of that kind. I'm more into the nutritional content of food than I am into the prohibition side of foods as written by desert inhabitants 5,000 years ago, which may have made sense then but don't make sense to me now. I'll be right back.
Savage. Going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. I'm going to Kansas City. Kansas City, here I come. They got some crazy little women there, and I'm gonna get me one.
It is Savage Nation. Special Infidel Rock and Roll Friday edition. Will America survive? Will America survive Obama? Will America survive Clinton? When did America take its big wrong turn? This is a big question. I can't answer it. I will answer it in my next book, which will be out in a year and a half from now. Right now, I'm working on my novel, which is coming out the end of the summer. There's only so much any man could do. But I actually believe America will survive. And the good news is Sarah Palin, the Tea Party, and that we will defeat radical Islam. I'm positive. We're going to get somebody with courage. We're going to get somebody who understands the danger we're in. We're going to get somebody who understands who the bad guys are, and they're going to destroy them. That's what I believe. There's too much popular will in this country to survive, and there's too much popular knowledge in this country for us to continue to listen to these knuckleheads like Hillary Clinton and Obama and Holder, who pretend that we don't know who the enemy is when the enemy has defined us as their enemy. Now, if they don't know who the enemy has defined them as the enemy, so you can figure out that the enemy has defined us as their enemy, therefore they're our enemy. And I believe that America will survive this bad turn of events that began with, to the best of my knowledge, with Kennedy. Robert F. Kennedy ruined America. And a very famous historian in England has written about this, and I'm going to quote him now. He said, the big change in principle came under Kennedy. In the autumn of 1962, the administration committed itself to a new and radical principle of creating budgetary deficits even when there was no economic emergency. Removing this constraint on government spending allowed JFK to introduce a new concept of big government, the problem eliminator. Once every area of human misery could be classified as a problem, then the federal government could be armed to eliminate it. And so that was the beginning of the end. That was the beginning of the self-destruction, the path of self-destruction that America entered. I believe that Obama will be the end of this path of self-destruction. If we survive him, America will be restored to sanity. I believe that we will see an arc that goes from John F. Kennedy to B.O., and this path of self-destruction is built upon the fraudulent concept of economic emergencies that only government can solve. And ultimately, the world depends upon America. This is the greatest country on earth. And the great strength of America are we the people, not the government. We are the greatest strength of America. And our greatest strength is built strictly upon freedom of thought, freedom of speech, freedom of expression. That is what is going to permit us to survive. If we can mock Hillary Clinton, if we can mock Obama, if we can mock Holder, if we can thumb our noses at these people, then we are still alive and healthy. When the day arises, and I doubt that it will, where they don't permit us to mock them, that will be a very dangerous day indeed. They tried to do it with the Fairness Doctrine. They want to do it with the net neutrality rules of the Internet, but they haven't achieved it. As tepid and as middle of the road as John Boehner's pink ties are, they will not permit the government to take away our freedom of expression. I can guarantee you that's true. Had Obama not been roundly smacked down in November, we probably wouldn't be listening to talk radio in the year 2011. And so, as I say, as long as we can still argue, as long as we can still express ourselves, as long as we are not Al Jazeera, we are going to survive. And the arc will be the arc from JFK to Obama. And then we'll come back as the America that we all grew up with. The Tea Party is a key element of survival. The Tea Party, Sarah Palin, are examples of why America is turning around for the better. We are the future. Talk radio, conservative talk radio, the Tea Party, all of the people who are conservative, we are actually the examples of why America will survive and we won't disappear as a nation. And it's all about guts and the willingness to express yourself, the kind of guts that you got from Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan. You've got to have guts. You've got to be able to express yourself. And I believe that eventually we will save this country. It will happen in our lifetimes. Many people have predicted the end of America. Many people have been wrong. The whole world depends upon us. And the people know better than the people who are running the government.
Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. You know, I'm reluctant on a Rock and Roll Friday to burden you with heavy thoughts. I am capable of heavy thoughts, but I don't mean my heavy thoughts. I mean, the heavy thoughts of one of the most eminent historians on earth, Paul Johnson, who wrote a book back in the 1960s, I believe, called Modern Times. It was a best-selling history of the 20th century called Modern Times. And the British historians are now in his 80s. He said a significant turning point in American history was the first time the Great Republic, the richest nation on earth, came up against the limits of its financial resources. You see, until the 1960s, he writes in a chapter entitled America's Suicide Attempt, public finance was run in all essentials on conventional lines, that is to say, with budgets more or less in balance outside of exceptional circumstances such as war. Then he says the big change came under Kennedy. In the autumn of 1962, the administration committed itself to a new and radical principle of creating budgetary deficits even when there was no economic emergency. And by removing this constraint on government spending, it permitted Kennedy to introduce, quote, a new concept of big government as the problem eliminator. And so every area of human misery could be classified as a problem, and then the federal government could be armed to eliminate it. Right? Americans with Disabilities Act. And by the way, that was a Nixon, the ADA. So anyway, he writes this great story, and he says, of course I think America will stay on top. He says, but I worry about America. The whole world depends on America, ultimately. He said, but I don't worry about America because I think America has such huge strengths, particularly its freedom of thought and expression, that it's going to survive as a top nation for this foreseeable future and therefore take care of the world. Now, let me pause right here. Could you please go to michaelsavage.com and sign my petition? Because I am banned from entering Britain because of my thoughts, my opinions. And next week, you're going to be getting a mailing from Michael Savage if you're on my mailing list as a donor. Asking you for a contribution, which I haven't done for almost a year. You'll take a look at why I need you to do this. Anyway, I want to go on to something else he said that's very important, because I couldn't believe that one historian, at least in the world, agrees with me, and that's about Mahatma Gandhi. You know how Mahatma Gandhi is held up as some exemplar of nonviolence? This historian saw Gandhi for what he was. I want to read him in his own words. He says, and I'm not confusing Gandhi with Gaddafi right now, but he says, of Mahatma Gandhi, he wrote in Modern Times, about the Gandhi phenomenon, there was always a strong aroma of 20th century humbug. Why? Why Gandhi? Why would he bash Gandhi? The same reason I have. Because, do you know what Gandhi actually did? If you actually look at what Gandhi actually did, he stirred people up against each other, and it resulted in the deaths of over a million people. I mean, very few people know that about Gandhi. And then he wrapped it all in the aura of nonviolence. Those are my words. That's my analysis of what Gandhi did, not his words. But he says, as for Muammar Gaddafi, we're talking about Gaddafi now, he says, we'll see if he goes or not. I think he's a real baddie, so we hope he will. As for the Syrian regime, he adds, not so long in Hama, they killed 33,000 people because they rose up. That was Syria, killed their own people, remember? 33,000 Muslims were killed by other Muslims because they rose up. And then he says about Iran, if we can get rid of that horrible regime in Iran, that will be a major triumph for the world. Oh, do I agree with this guy? Oh, does he really know what's going on? And he loves the Tea Party movement. He loves the Tea Party movement. He loves Sarah Palin. He thinks she's wonderful because she has guts. She has brains, and that's why the liberals hate Sarah Palin so much, because she's the real McCoy as a feminist. Sarah Palin is actually the first real independent feminist in America, not Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton is a doctrinaire left-winger, a doctrinaire left-wing feminist, but if you want to talk about a real independent mind, in my opinion, it's Sarah Palin, in the mold of Margaret Thatcher, in my estimation. Anyway, remember what he said about Gandhi. I know it's nothing to do with what's going on now, but the important thing to remember about Gandhi is that Gandhi is held up by liberals as an example of nonviolence, because that's what he preached, but it was all BS. Gandhi's leadership led hundreds of thousands, I actually read a million people, to death by stirring up civil unrest in India, and all the while he maintained the pretense of nonviolence. See, that's the thing about Gandhi that you don't know. The man with the diaper. You have to understand that. He meant well, but as you know, many liberals mean well, and the road to you-know-where is paved with good intentions. 1-800-449, it's Rock and Roll Friday, so let's pick another song. Another Infidel Rock and Roll Friday. How about Love is Strange by Mickey and Sylvia? Let's try Love is Strange by the Infidels, Mickey and Sylvia.
Love is strange.
We played that already, Phil? We just played it. Don't play it. Stop that. No good. I thought I liked the song. I was wondering. Let's try Willie and the Hand Jive. No, it's a family show. We can't play that. We could play Book of Love by the Monotones. Let's try the Book of Love by the Monotones. Great Infidels. Book of Love by the Monotones on Infidel Friday.
Wonder
who?
Who wrote the Book of Love?
Here's a song that will never be played on Al Jazeera. We specialize in songs that Al Jazeera would not play. Songs for the Infidel. No, I got a real good Infidel song. Stop. Let's play Tequila. Let's really play Tequila. That's what I want. That's a real song for Infidels. I want to hear Tequila. This is one that they will not play on Al Jazeera. There you go. That's the song for Rock and Roll Friday of the day. Tequila by the Infidel Champs. Uh-huh. I just want to hear the word, okay? Give me a break.
Tequila.
There you go. Ham sandwiches and tequila. That's the solution to... Ham sandwiches and tequila is the solution to the infiltration of America by those who would tell you where to, you know, what to eat and what not to eat. Ham sandwiches and tequila for America. Wake up, little Susie, before it's too late. Welcome to the... I turned that off already. They got the... Is a little actually staccato, too staccato. I went last night and I took the day off. I wasn't feeling well from the allergies. But at night, I felt well enough to go to an orchid show to show you there's another side to me that you don't know about. And so far as I know, the lovers of the religion of peace, I don't know what they have to say about flowers, but I've always enjoyed flowers. I have one graduate degree in botany, and so I've always enjoyed. I used to raise orchids back in 94, 95 when I first started in radio. I was very heavily into orchids and raised them in an indoor environment that I have at one of my houses. I haven't done them in years because I'll tell you what happened. I don't like watching flowers die. It's like every time I see a flower appear, all I think of is when is it going to drop its petals and die. It's a terrible thing. It's like very hard for me to bear when you see this incredible production of nature and all you know is it's eventually going to lose its beauty and die. The petals fall off. Now, it is true one of my plants rebloomed 4 years in a row, but that's very unusual. So I go to the orchid show last night with a friend of mine, and I enjoyed it very much. There was one off note, though. It was held in San Francisco at Fort Mason. I must say, the show is worth going to. But for the opening night party, they had a loud, bad jazz band. How can you look at orchids while listening to bad jazz, I like to know? I mean, they should have had a string quartet playing classical music so far as I could... I couldn't look at the flowers and listen. It was like discordant. Like when the music is wrong, you can't look at things. I can't explain it. It's like trying to look at art when there's bad, loud music around you. And forget about the food lines with the buffet. I mean, these people would not leave the food. It was like a trough. It was a trough. They kept going around and around and around. You couldn't get on the food line. It was the lowest of the low with regard to food. And the music was bad, but the flowers were superb. I highly recommend the orchid show because there will be no food and there will be no music for the general public. I mean, I love orchids when you think about them. You know, they're saprophytes. They don't even grow in soil. Did you know they don't grow in soil? They live on the air. I mean, they derive their nutrients from the air and from the plant that they're living on. It's an astounding thing when you look at all these orchids to realize they come from the rainforests of the world. Most of them do, not all of them, but majority of orchids come from the rainforests of the world. Some of them 8,000 feet, 7,000 feet, 6,000. You know, the years I collected plants in the Fiji Islands and Tonga, Samoa, and Marquesas in the South Pacific, you don't know that about me. But I'm really a true plant collector, despite what the vermin in the media would like you to think about me. While they talk about the environment, most of them have never been in the environment. It's like Barbara Boxer. All she does is scream about the environment, the environment, the environment. I doubt very much that she's ever been on San Francisco Bay, other than maybe on a ferry. I doubt very much that she's trekked in the jungles of the South Pacific to rescue botanical plants. And I say, well, does that make me holier than her? No, but it makes me know more about the environment than her. I mean, I know about Cretaceous plants, and I know, if I asked her what the Cretaceous was, she wouldn't know what it is. Let's put it to you that way. You say, well, what does that knowledge do for me? It gives me some heads up on the big lie about global warming, for example. It's a complete fraud. And if I go last night to the orchid show, for example, and I see an example of a plant that I know is one of the oldest species on the earth, I know what that means. I know very much what that means. I doubt very much that Al Gore could explain to you when the Cretaceous existed and why it's important to understand that some of the plants from the Cretaceous still exist today. And that, in fact, well, there's so much. I don't want to go into the science of all of this. It's all trivial. And it's not that important. The most important thing is that we're talking in general. That's the important thing. And let's stay on the general side of things. Again, the phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We have a caller who I think has an interesting point. In Chicago on WIND. Joe, go ahead, please. You're on the Savage Nation.
Michael, I just want to make a comment about George Soros and his influence on the Obama administration. The Obama administration pledged $10 billion to Brazil to help them develop their offshore oil business.
Okay? Wow.
And, of course, the big investor in Petrobras, Brazil, is George Soros. Now, we know that George Soros has bought the Democratic Party lock, stock, and barrel. There's no question. He's taking.
Well, right. Now, I've been quoting Rothschild all week, who said that give me control of a currency and I don't need to control a government because I will, right?
Yes.
Okay, so Soros, in essence, is the Rothschild, sort of a bad version of Rothschild in our generation. He's manipulating currencies around the world. He's actually causing social unrest and revolutions around the world. And the man is, in that sense, very dangerous. Do you agree with my analysis, or am I being too harsh on old George Soros?
Listen, I think you're not being harsh on him because he, quote, said, world financial crisis is a stimulating thing in a way, okay? And it's a culmination of my life's work. Now, give me a break, okay? Now, going back to the Obama thing here.
Soros said, what is a culmination of his life's work?
In a way, the culmination of my life's work is stimulating world financial crisis.
Oh, because that's where he profits that way.
The bottom line is that's what stimulates him. He has no, he's a man without a country.
I agree 100%. He's a transnational.
14 years old, you get the whole picture of the guy's life, okay? He turned in
But do you agree with my analysis in trickle-up poverty that he was the man behind the financial crisis that brought us Obama?
I don't think that he could do it by himself, but he had his plans. There's no question about it.
Fine. Of course, nobody can do anything by themselves yet. But don't you think Obama is a functionary of some very powerful interests?
I think he was awestruck by Soros, okay? Just like a little kid, like you said, no experience. It went into a poker game that he had no business being in. This man wooed him, okay? He can't think on the level that Soros can think. Soros has broken England. He's broken Thailand, Malaysia. He'll go on and on and on.
Yeah, but Soros has been saying it's the end of the U.S. dollar. Don't you think he's playing with our currency as well? And in that sense, he's a risk to our national security and should be investigated. Why is the Soros Fund not investigated by the various agencies to see if he's manipulating our currency?
Well, why do you think that they got $10 billion over in Brazil? You know,
do you think he put Obama in power? And why do you think he put Holder in power so they wouldn't investigate him?
Absolutely right. And you know what? We lost 160,000 good U.S. paying jobs because Obama gave that $10 billion to Brazil. And now they're going to profit to the tune of almost $1.7 trillion.
Well, why would we be interested in developing Brazil's offshore oil? What's in it for us?
I don't know. Certainly not.
Well, okay, so it was a direct backdoor payment to George Soros for his help with the election. By what you're saying, what you're implying. Is that your analysis, or am I jumping to conclusions?
No, that's what I think.
All right, we'll move on. Wow, I'll be right back.
Savage.
You've got a set of global networks that Al Jazeera has been the leader in that are literally changing people's minds and attitudes.
That's clip one. Play them.
And like it or hate it, it is really effective. Viewership of Al Jazeera is going up in the United States because it's real news. You may not agree with it, but you feel like you're getting real news around the clock instead of a million commercials and, you know, arguments between talking heads and the kind of stuff that we do on our news, which, you know, is not particularly informative to us, let alone foreigners.
That's right. In Hillary's world, there's no need for arguments because what the government says is what it is. And, of course, you don't need commercials if it's run by the government, as PBS is or NPR. That's government propaganda around the clock. And that's very informative to her because that's what she believes is true. So here is the Secretary of State giving testimony to the so-called Foreign Policy Priority Committee on Wednesday morning. And she says that Al Jazeera gives out real news and it's not like our nasty little networks here which have arguments and nasty stuff like that. New York, WOR. David, what do you think of old Hillary glorifying Al Jazeera?
Dr. Savage, I'm the chess David that called you about the chess prodigies and talked about your book, Political Zoo, about a month ago. I don't know if you remember me.
I don't. Honestly, I have no ability to remember anything, but I'm joking. So what is it that you called about? Hillary, I would guess?
Yes, I made this observation just listening over the past couple months. The same thing with this... the whole thing with the unions and the employees' unions, there's two types of people that are two types of working people, I would say. One, I want to say it's the stronger people, it's the entrepreneurs.
But the bottom line, David, is Hillary, do you think she's gone off around the bend by glorifying Al Jazeera? Does she not understand the American people are looking through her?
She is supported by the weaklings of the American people, the liberal weaklings, whereas us people, you, other people that listen to you and are conservative, are strong people, and we're not going to take it anymore. And these people, we're going to make them disappear into the woodwork because we're going to outlast them.
But is it because Hillary Clinton lives in her own bubble where she doesn't? Well, they're all the same, by the way. Madeleine Halfbright was no different. I think they literally go into that job with a certain modicum of intelligence, and they lose it by the day because they live in their own world. They've got a monster 747 called Air Force 3. They have lackeys. They have servants. Nobody will ever tell them what they actually sound like, David. I think that's the reality of it.
They're not interested in what they can contribute or what value they have to others. They're interested in only what they can get for themselves.
Well, that's a given. No, but the question, David, and everyone, well, we got the point. Just remember where you heard it. You heard it on... the Savage Nation, which is still free to play, Hillary Clinton glorifying Al Jazeera, calling it real news, and attacking American media for having nasty things like arguments between talking heads. I want to remind Madam Secretary that it's arguments that define a democracy. And if you have just a government news feed, what you have is Libya. So that's the story. Unrest is spreading in Yemen. One thing after the other. The madman Gaddafi is killing his people, and we're doing nothing. You hear that? He's killing, he's machine gunning his own people, and America is doing nothing. Now, you may argue it's not our business, and I would say, okay, it's their revolution, not ours. But I would remind you that maybe there's a place for us to play in Iran, but is that a little too harsh? Wouldn't the world be a better place if that horrendous Mullah regime was gone? Don't you think the Iranian people deserve freedom?
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
OK, Okay, oil's going through the roof. It's at $105 a barrel. Gold is going through the roof. Gaddafi is killing the protesters. Obama is in a is in a state of Islamic denial. Allahu Akbar is a Muslim war cry. He seems to be the last person in America to know that. The jobs report is very good today, supposedly. But did you hear what went on the border with Mexico? Our ICE agent, who was killed 2 weeks ago by Mexican drug smugglers, was using a non-lethal beanbag gun. They were using AK-47s. So there was an outcry amongst agents, U.S. agents, to be armed. Obama met with the so-called president of Mexico, and guess what he decided? No arming of American, there will be no guns for American Border Patrol or ICE agents. Did you hear this? And wait, to top it all off, Obama has said now we're going to go forward 100% with the NAFTA that Bill Clinton put through, and now Mexican trucks can come over the border without any inspection. That makes sense, doesn't it? That's the government we're living through. You have to see all of this and see what's going on. It's beyond comprehension to see how much damage this man is doing all at once. We don't know who's behind him, but we know this. I don't know if this country has two more years to go. The fact of the matter is he's doing as much damage as fast as he can, in my humble opinion, to this nation in order to remake it in the global image that he's had in his mind ever since his radical days in college. 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Let's see what else is going on out there. If we go to michaelsavage.com, frankly, let's see the stories that I got up there on the top left. Obama administration prepares for possibility of new Islamist regimes. You hear this? That's Egypt, North Africa, Middle East. So he and Soros wanted the Islamist regimes, or they didn't want them. I'll let you decide. I report, you decide. Or shall I say, I decide and you report. Libya television is showing a captured Dutch Navy helicopter crew. Well, I guess that could happen to anyone who's been through as much diversity training. If you're told not to fire until you see the white of their lies, that means never fire at all, because there are no lies from the other side. So what you do is you get captured. The Europeans are calling the Frankfurt shooting of our airmen on the bus an act of Islamic terrorism. Obama and his minions are saying it's too soon to tell. Can you believe this? Emergency plea from Michael Savage. I am still banned in Britain. Would you please sign my petition right now? Please go to michaelsavage.com. NASA glory mission ends in failure. Tea Party leader is saying Boehner should go. No kidding. He's on to the pink tie. I was on to him right away. Slain Border Patrol agent was forced to use beanbags before bullets. It's on my website. Police say an Arizona beheading was tied to a Mexican drug cartel. No kidding. In London, Arab gifts to universities are leading to hostile teaching about Christianity. No kidding. You mean they're buying them out? I wonder. Michael Fatman Moore, big mouth, made $100 million and says wealthy people's money is not theirs. I think he ought to start with his own money. GAO is reporting Medicare is losing $48 billion. Obama is using the race card again. At a private White House dinner, he said that race was a key component in the rising opposition to his presidency from conservatives. You know, when all else fails, what you do is you revert back to your 60s lame excuses for your stupidity and your failures. Bodies of two children found in luggage in a canal in Florida. Terrible what's going on in the world. Here's one if you really want your heart broken, if you haven't had enough yet. It's on Michael Savage. Bomb-sniffing army dog dies of broken heart. He was a bomb-sniffing dog, and when his master, a very brave British soldier, died in a firefight with the terrorists, with the Muslim terrorists, the dog died of a broken heart a few days later. Okay, anything else? Cancer rise and sperm quality is falling due to chemicals. Environmental reasons, particularly exposure to industrial chemicals, may be behind both trends. That is, a drop in sperm quality and a rise in testicular cancer. Ugh, anything positive on your website, Mike? Can exercise keep you young? Yes, if you're a mouse. There's definite evidence that exercise will keep you from becoming gray prematurely and keep your muscle tone up. So all I can say is keep running on that treadmill. Again, I want to review one of the main stories. U.S. Border Patrol is under fire for allegedly ordering its elite units to use non-lethal beanbag ammunition before responding with deadly force. It's a decision that may have cost Agent Brian Terry his life. Thank you, Janet Napolitano. They're all the same. Thank you, President Obama. I guess your pacifism ends at the border. This is the Savage Nation.
Savage.
world's burning. Nation states are now weaker than global capitalists like George Soros. Obama may be the one in front of the cameras, but men such as Jeffrey Immelt of GE are frankly, in my opinion, the ones who call the shots. 100 years ago, the great powers, Britain, France, and Germany. Well, 100 years ago, the great powers were Britain, France, Germany, and the United States. Okay, let's go back. Today, well, wait, the great powers 100 years ago were Britain, France, Germany, the U.S., Russia, you'd say. They had a pretty powerful navy till the Japanese sank them. But anyway, today, the real powers are Goldman Sachs, Exxon, and Google. And, of course, some unknown hedge funds. The global capitalists who control these companies have far greater power than the leader of any state, and they operate outside the law of any nation. They're unelected. So when you're watching the uprisings in the Middle East, you should know that it has less to do with which dictator did what, or how Russia has responded at the UN, than what certain individuals are doing to twist events in favor of profit for themselves. As the Middle East is burning, the globalists are earning. That's the end of the news for the day. The rest you can read for yourself. How do you tell if somebody's really meaning what they say, really means what they say, or they're just faking it for the money? What do you use as an S detector, whether you're a liberal or a conservative? Liberals like to say they really know if someone's telling the truth. That since they lie to everybody, they pretty much can tell when someone's lying, they think. We talked about other topics here in the Savage Nation. I compared Woody Allen to that slime ball from Brooklyn, Larry David. And I said, although Woody Allen, to me, also denigrates the image of the Jewish male, making him into a neurotic, Woody Allen has great talent. He doesn't use filthy words. He doesn't use violence. And he doesn't use anti-Christian bigotry to make his point. Whereas the vermin from Brooklyn, Larry David and his cohorts from Canarsie, use filthy, dirty words. They're fundamentally, there's an undertone of violence. They have anti-Christian bigotry in almost every word that comes out of the characters' mouths. And that's why you got to compare, you know, it's like differences, you understand? And if I'm comparing a difference, although if they're in the same genotype, Woody Allen and Larry David are in the same sphere, but they're very different. It's the same with Michael Savage. I'm in the same sphere as Rush Limbaugh, but I'm very different than him. You see what I'm saying? The subtleties? I'm trying to get a couple of points across. 1-800-449-8255. Mike in Pittsburgh, PA. What's on your mind? Go ahead, please.
Well, I was going to say, in terms of knowing whether someone's real or not, I think it's more of, well, there's two things, whether someone's real or whether someone's really good. Like, a real person seems to come off in terms of, like, they don't compromise what they believe in. But a crazy person can be the same way, or even a real evil person. They don't compromise on those things, but they also don't buckle to outside influences and to the pressure that everyone puts upon them to be a certain person or act a certain way.
Right. Right. You're making a very good point. So therefore, in the midst of all of this, how do you judge as a listener and a reader of internet and other media, radio, TV, how do you judge who's telling the truth?
Lots and lots of listening repetitively. I've listened to you a lot. I listen to Jerry Doyle. I've listened to there's a few that I think really are right on the mark. But over time, I assess whether these people are flip-flopping in the wind or just, you know, going with the political breezes, or if they're just actually speaking what they feel. And there's very, very few in this world anymore, and Michael Savage, you are one of the few. And
well, all I can say to you is this. I don't know the other people, what they really think. I think most of the people in the top do believe what they say, truthfully, on the right, that I've met or that I've heard about. I can't speak for anyone on the left because I don't really know anybody in the media on the left. I don't know what they believe. I know that many people in Hollywood who I've come to meet who are very high up all tell me on the side that although they're diehard Democrats, they believe in a lot of what I say. They agree with a lot of what I say. They can't say it, though, because of political reasons in the world in which they run. You've got to understand that many people who define themselves as moderate Democrats are somewhat conservative, but they can't show it. You know what I'm saying? Because their powers are controlled to a great extent. Their social world would come to an end if they ever expressed certain opinions, because the left rules their world like fascism. There's almost no tolerance for any diversion of thought in groupthink. And some of these people are extremely powerful, by the way. And yet even they cannot express themselves outside of their, close circles, Mike.
Absolutely.
Thank you for being such a long-term listener. You know, I'm going to tell you something about radio. Radio, of all the mediums, is, I would think the easiest to tell if someone's BSing you. Because all we got is our voice. We have no other special effects. We don't have legs to cross. We don't have lipstick. We're not the lipstick girls on Fox. Some of them are very pretty. And I'm sure they're very sincere. But, you know, you got the female charms. You know, how could you not want to believe someone who's so pretty, right? You don't know what I look like. You don't want to know what I look like. Trust me. I don't want to know what I look like. What time and gravity does to a person. I look back at myself in pictures 20 years ago. I don't want to look forward 20 years. But that's neither here nor there. All I got is my voice. And so all you've got is your ears. You got nothing else. Your ears and your thinking. So you say, is this guy on the level? So I want to, I guess I'm not doing this for a reason. There's no reason other than one of the tactics of the radical left, as funded by George Soros through the fake Stalinist group Media Matters, is to say that everyone on the right is making it up, that they're faking it, they don't believe a word they say. Denigrate those on the right, say they don't really mean it. So you've got to be very careful what you read and what you listen to, you know? Now I'm going to take some more calls. I'm having such a good time. It's amazing. So Israel in New York, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation on WOR. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, there's only two ways to identify people. It's through their voice, their tone of voice, and if you have the pleasure of seeing them, is their eyes, because the eyes are the gateway to the soul and never lie.
Okay, but wait. Now, in radio, you can't see my eyes. All you can hear is my voice, correct?
That's correct. So it's a tone of voice. People who are making things up or reading off of teleprompters, usually their voices go up and down. They're not as even keel as a person who's telling the truth.
Now, Israel, were you in the Mossad?
No.
Did you work for the DEA undercover in Belarus? I mean, how do you come to this conclusion?
I've read over the years books and books on behaviorisms, mannerisms, and it's just basic 101 stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you should say it. Again, going back to one of my favorite villains, Larry David. I was watching an HBO piece the other night where all of the actors in that series, you know who I'm talking about, right? Or not? Okay, so each actor had to say which were their favorite piece was, and you could see when they're talking about it, they get enthusiastic, and then at the end, when they say how great Larry is, their eyes shift. Their eyes jump left to right or right to left, like they have to say it, and you could see that they're lying. I couldn't believe it. Each and every one of them, when they were extolling their show and how great it was, at the end, their eyes darted to the left or to the right. I said, these people are just outright lying.
That's
and then I said, you're shocked an actor is lying? That's something new? They're actors. What do you expect them to say when the guy pays their bill?
This is why people in general, you should know, who shouldn't be trusted, that's why a lot of them always wear sunglasses in the same way security people wear sunglasses, not to give up what they're thinking in their mind.
Okay, now this is an important point. That's not 100% true. This is a cultural thing, Israel. There are cultures that do not look you in the eye and they're not lying. It's just a very uncomfortable thing for people from certain cultures. I believe it's an Asian thing, by the way, not to look you in the eye. And it doesn't mean they're lying. It's considered an invasion of their soul. You know, the American people are very into staring you in the eye while you're talking. I find it very uncomfortable. If I'm in a conversation, why do I have to have a staring contest with somebody when my mind is trying to think? It's two different things. I've seen men, they try to stare you in the eye like, are you really telling the truth? Tell me. It's like, can we just have a conversation here? I'm thinking. While I'm thinking, I can't think about staring into your irises right now. I don't know if it's 100% true. I personally don't always stare in someone's eye. When I do so, it's because I know that they're thinking about how my eyes are moving, so I do it on purpose to control them. But it's not how I really like to operate because my mind is moving at a very rapid speed, and I don't have the time to think about looking them in the eye. Does that mean I'm lying to them?
No, but depending which way one's eyes turn when you're talking to them, it also gives away other clues of what their intents are. So if a person looks up, their eyes are fetching for answers.
Yeah, that's true. How about if their eyes dart to the left? They're lying, aren't they?
There's many theories.
Well, I'm going to tell you another theory. How about liars on television? Have you watched their tongue or their mouth when they lie? I can see it 100 times in one guy. Softball, probably the biggest fraud in television, who was talentless, a talentless hack with the straw hair, Chris Matthews of MSNBC. This guy is hysterical. You talk about hysterical blindness. This guy has hysterical liarness. The man lies constantly. Everything he says is what he lacks in talent, he makes up for with malice. Does that work for you?
It works. The problem is, once they become a pathological liar, sometimes they're able to throw people off and not give out the cues that normally one would.
Bingo. I've seen that, by the way. I know someone in business. Amazes me is that he does not even know he's lying anymore. He says things about himself that are not true, that are patently false, and he doesn't even know he's lying. It rolls off his tongue. I'll tell you another giveaway of a constant a liar in business. You know how honest they are every time you talk to them when you didn't even ask them. You're having a conversation about something to do with your business, and they always tell you how honest they are. And you didn't ask them about that. Have you noticed that?
This is true.
Oh,
Michael,
yeah.
New York, 14 years listening. My entire family listens. May God give you the energy.
Oh, well, God, yeah, God. Don't get me started now with my God problem. Not exactly moving into the atheism or agnosticism. I'm moving into another world. And I started out as a cynic. And then I refound God. And okay, and it helped me a lot. It really helped me a lot. Got me very far in life.
Savage.
You know, we recently spoke with Ken Timmerman, who was in northern Iraq reporting for Newsmax, and he was interviewing Iraqi Christians about what they're doing to them over there. Here he is now in the Savage Nation.
Well, that's right, Michael. I just got back from northern Iraq, where I was interviewing Christian refugees, people who've been fleeing the violence from Baghdad and Mosul. And one of the most extraordinary encounters I had, the most painful encounters, was a woman named Hannah Saeed, who lives in the town of Karakosh. This is the largest town, if you wish, in the Nineveh Plain outside Mosul, which is the historic homeland of the Assyrian, Syriac, Chaldean Christians of Iraq. And Mrs. Saeed was telling me about her last conversation with her 27-year-old son. He had been in the church on October 31st in Baghdad when jihadi terrorists burst through the doors and massacred 58 worshipers and wounded another 98 people. And Hannah was telling me how she was talking to him on her cell phone during the ordeal. He had been wounded in the first gun battle when the terrorists first came in, but they didn't kill him, and he managed to crawl off with two other people into a side chapel off the nave of the church, and they pushed the door, the steel door behind them. They barricaded it so the terrorists couldn't get in. They kept on trying to get in, but they couldn't manage to open the door.
Oh, my God.
And during this whole time, Hannah was talking to her son on the cell phone. They'd call each other back and forth, and he'd be telling her exactly what was going on. He was wounded. And he said, look, please get the authorities to open up the door. There's a door here, and they can open it up and rescue us. And she said, you know, she never got a response from this. And then finally, at 7:30 at night, the phone went dead, and she couldn't get her son again. And that was when she learned later on that the jihadi terrorist had thrown a grenade over the top of that door into the side chapel, blowing her son and those two other people to bits.
Oh, my God.
The sad and tragic irony of this story, Michael, is that there was an outside door. And I learned this from other people who were there with Mrs. Saeed. The police knew there was an outside door. They could have opened that outside door quietly and rescued the people who were there in that side chapel, but they chose not to do so. They sent those people to their death. And as I wrote in this story at Newsmax.com recently, I believe that this and some other evidence that I gathered in northern Iraq last week constitute prima facie evidence of criminal malfeasance on the part of the Iraqi government, the government of Nouri al-Maliki.
You mean they were actually complicit in the attack?
Well, that is precisely the question many Iraqis are asking, Michael. This has been appearing on blog posts. Even some politicians have been openly accusing the Iraqi government for its handling of the October 31st attack. They point out, for example, that the terrorists brought explosives and weapons to the church in cars with dark tinted windows and no license plates that were only available to officials with high-level security clearance. This allowed them to get through the checkpoints without being stopped. People I spoke to also pointed to the slow reaction of the security forces. They say they botched the handling of the rescue attempt. It remains unclear how many of the victims, those 58 dead and 98 wounded, were killed by the Iraqi rescue team who opened fire wildly as they burst into the church. This makes, frankly, the Moscow theater rescue by Putin and his security forces look organized and planned by comparison. One person I talked to, who was a senior officer in the Iraqi police, he asked me not to identify him by name because it was a very sensitive subject. He told me that for 10 days before the attack, the Interior Ministry security forces who guarded the church were gradually moving the Jersey barriers closer up to the church until finally the terrorists could simply drive right up in front, where they unloaded about 100 kilograms of grenades and weapons.
So are people openly accusing Maliki's government of this attack on Christians?
It's kind of hard to accuse Nouri al-Maliki of complicity or of having organized this attack, Michael, without having all of the facts. And that's what people are really asking for that I've been hearing. They want to know what the actual facts were. They want to know whether the police was involved, whether the security forces were involved. They want to know exactly why it took them so long to storm the church. They want to know why the rescue attempt was botched. And then they point to things afterwards that give some idea as to why Maliki might have been complicit in this attack. His Dawa party, for example, right after the church attack, has took a number of measures to close down liquor stores run by Christians in Baghdad, to close down nightclubs and educational associations that were run by Christians. One of the people I talked to who was involved in the Syrian Democratic Movement, which is a secular party up in throughout Iraq, actually, he said even the universities in Baghdad imposed a new dress code on students and began separating students in classes by sex, like the Taliban. And he said this, he said, their idea is to transform Baghdad into Kandahar. So there were a series of steps that were taken after the church attack that suggest that the Dawa party had an interest in marginalizing Christians, in forcing Christians to leave Baghdad, forcing Christians out of Iraq entirely.
What does the U.S. government say about this?
Well, the U.S. government has been pretty supportive of al-Maliki. I asked the State Department what their view was of the Iraqi investigation, and the Iraqis actually produced this four-hour docudrama about their investigation into the attack. They show these pre-dawn raids, gun battles with al-Qaeda in Iraq, people, terrorists in their safe houses, and they make themselves look like heroes. So the State Department said, yeah, we think they did a pretty thorough investigation, and we note that al-Qaeda, for example, was threatening to kill Christians. Then we see that al-Qaeda did kill Christians, and we see no reason to doubt that that was what was going on, that al-Qaeda was involved and wanted to kill Christians because their goal as jihadis is to rid Muslim lands of all non-believers. But I think, frankly, the State Department is stonewalling on this, and I think the Iraqi investigation and this four-hour video film, for example, has really failed to convince anybody who was involved with this on the ground. The secular Christian leaders that I interviewed in northern Iraq last week, to a man and to a woman, believe that there are serious unanswered questions about the October 31st church attack, and they are convinced that the government of Nouri al-Maliki was, in fact, involved.
And what can we, the people, do? I mean, Obama has a state of Islamic denial. We know that.
Well, Michael, the one thing that I heard from every single secular Christian leader I spoke to was that the United States needs to put pressure on al-Maliki to clean up his act, to clean up the Interior Ministry, but also to listen seriously to the demands of the Christian community in Iraq. They have finally gotten together 16 different organizations, including the Yazidis and the Shabaks. These are other minorities in northern Iraq. They have a list of demands that they've submitted to Parliament to basically guarantee their rights as Iraqis under the Iraqi Constitution. And the most important of them is the formation of a province in the Nineveh Plain where the local people will have local control over their affairs. So the Christians, the Shabaks, the Yazidis, the minorities of Iraq, who constitute the inhabitants of this area, will be able to handle their own security. They'll be able to handle their own development. They'll have their own budget coming from Baghdad. You know, the way things work today, it's very different. You have the Kurdish Democratic Party, the KDP, has essentially invaded the Nineveh Plain. It's not in the Kurdish area. They've invaded it. They've carried out a de facto annexation. At the same time, the budgets for all of these towns is controlled by Mosul.
Well, how does that work?
Well, Mosul swallows up half of the budgets. I was talking to a number of mayors in Al-Kosh and in Karakosh and in Telkeif, and they said that literally half of their budgets was swallowed up through corruption. If they asked for $2 million for road projects and sewage projects, they got a million. $2 million was actually appropriated, but they only saw a million of it that went to actual projects. So the corruption is endemic on both sides. One of the mayors told me, Michael, we Christians in the north are the meat in the sandwich between the Arabs and the Kurds. The Kurds on one side, the Arabs in Mosul on another, and in between the Christians, and they're getting eaten up every single day.
What's the bottom line in all of this?
So here's the bottom line, Michael. If we in the United States want to help Iraq to be a pluralistic society, if we want to help to anchor the Syrian, Chaldean, Syriac Christians in Iraq to keep them from fleeing for their own safety, to help them to develop their own areas, we have to support their demands. And their demand is to have an autonomous province in the Nineveh Plain free of Kurdish domination. And this is the last best hope for preventing the mass exodus of the remaining Christians from Iraq, from preventing really what would amount to the genocide of the indigenous peoples of Iraq.
Well, thanks for the update, Ken. It's horrible. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Last night, I did some soul searching. I said, why has God chosen to put me in this position that an entire nation would attack me so unfairly? I didn't have an answer. And so I looked, went back to the Holy Scriptures, my well-marked blue Bible, the Old Testament, and I read Leviticus. I said, you know, it's a funny thing I do with the Bible. I mean, I'm no biblical expert. I flip through it, and sometimes when I get in trouble, I flip to a page and see, does that work? Well, it worked last night. Let me tell you what this was. Now, many of us, we're only three generations away from a super religious personality. I don't care how atheistic you may be or how wildly disconnected you may be from the church, you're only two to three generations away from an extremely religious person who built your family. You didn't build your family. You inherited your family. The person who built it was made of much stronger stuff, I can guarantee you. And they went through much harder times than any of us are going through. And so they needed the Bible to get through hard times. They needed to believe in God and believe in you know, the right way and the wrong way, good and evil. And I flipped to Leviticus 26, and I'm going to summarize it. I can't read you every word because I said, oh, my God, it really scared me. And it was about this. It said, you shall make no idols, neither shall you rear you up a graven image or a pillar, neither shall you place any figured stone in your land to bow down unto it, for I am the Lord your God. You shall keep my Sabbaths and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Lord. So it was about the Sabbath and bowing down to graven images. And then God says, if you walk in my statutes and you keep my commandments, I will give you rains in their season, and the land shall yield up produce, and the trees you shall eat your bread. I will give you peace. You shall lie down, and none shall make you afraid. I will cause evil beasts to seize out of the land, and so forth and so on. And you're going to lead a great life. And he says to them, that's if you do the right thing. But in 14, it gets really bad. See, the Old Testament was fire and brimstone. It was, this is it, or is only one way. It was God's way or the highway. Let's put it to you that way. So he really wanted you to keep the Sabbath, and he didn't want you to bow down to false idols. I'll let you figure out what a false idol is. I'll let you figure out what a graven image is. I'll let you figure out what the graven images of today are. But he says, if you will not hearken unto me and will not do all these commandments, and if you shall reject my statutes, and if your soul abhor mine ordinances so that you will not do all my commandments, but break my covenant, this is what's coming. I also will do this unto you. I will appoint terror over you. Notice the word terror, terrorists. I will appoint terror over you, even consumption and fever, that shall make the eyes to fail and the soul to languish, and you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemy shall eat it. And I will set my face against you, and you shall be smitten before your enemies. They that hate you shall rule over you, and you shall flee when none pursueth you, meaning you're going to be frightened of everything. And if you will not yet for these things hearken unto me, it gets worse then. He says, if you still don't do what I want you to do, then I will chastise you seven times more for your sins, and I will break the pride of your power, and I will make your heaven as iron, and your earth as brass, and your strength shall be spent in vain, for your land shall not yield her produce, neither shall the trees of the land yield their fruit. And then he gets even more demanding. And he says, and if you walk contrary unto me and will not hearken unto me, I will bring seven times more plagues upon you according to your sins. And I will send the beast of the field among you, which shall rob you of your children and destroy your cattle and make you few in number. And your ways shall become desolate. Now, let me pause right there. Look at America today. America has a negative birth rate amongst the white Caucasian. So for last I checked, it's a birth rate that's below the reproduction rate. Below the rate necessary to reproduce itself. Well, just take that in your thinking. Now, he goes on, and I'm going to finish up here. God says, but in spite of these things, and if in spite of these things you still are not corrected unto me, but will walk contrary to me, then will I also walk contrary unto you. And I will smite you, even I seven times for your sins. And I will bring a sword upon you that shall execute the vengeance of the covenant, and you shall be gathered together within your cities, and I will send the pestilence among you. And you shall be delivered into the hand of the enemy. When I break your staff of bread, 10 women shall bake your bread in one oven, and they shall deliver your bread again by weight, and you shall eat and not be satisfied. I don't know exactly what that means about the 10 women. A biblical scholar, they probably have argued over this for thousands of years. But the last word is, you shall eat and not be satisfied. Sounds much like Western civilization, doesn't it? Rich tables laden with rich foods. People eating and not satisfied. That is why they go to one fancy restaurant after another for the next execution of a new meal. Something new. They sprinkle a little from here and there, put it on a meal, and they still don't like it. Why? I'll let you figure it out. And then he goes on, and it gets even worse, and I'm not going to read the rest of it because it gets worse and worse and worse. He just doesn't let you go. I mean, it doesn't get better. And you shall perish among the nations, and the land of your enemy shall eat you up. That's pretty frightening stuff. I mean, is it just allegory? Who knows? The random musings of olive growers who were deficient in vitamin B3. It's hard to say. I suppose that if Leviticus were alive today, Nigel Sheinwald, the British ambassador to the U.S., would ban him from Britain. Because I would think that Leviticus would be likely to inflame and cause hatred and possibly, I don't know what else. Who knows? Certainly was meant to inflame Leviticus, wasn't it? Certainly was full of hate, wasn't it, Nigel? Have you gotten yet to burning the Bibles in England? Gotten around to that yet? The people behind you might be up to that soon, a little book burning. They had it in your neighboring Saxon nation in the 30s. There's no reason you Anglos shouldn't burn your Bibles. Your Saxon friends did it in the 30s. Any book that violated the government was burned. Nigel, suppose you learned that at Balliol. These are the statutes and ordinances and laws which the Lord made between him and the children of Israel in Mount Sinai by the hand of Moses. Now, I got to repeat to you, I read this because I was trying to find some salvation somewhere. You say, well, wow, man, you're a weird guy. You found salvation in that? I can't say I did.
But I found some truths in it. I mean, you know, you take it on a minor scale. There's some truths in that, meaning we're all fallen angels. I've said that to you. None of us are up to the standards of the Bible. Nobody can be. You never can hit that golden, you know, you can't be a saint. You can only be a man. You try your best. You want to do the Big Ten every day? That's a big deal. Try to make the Big Ten every day. You're a good person. I don't know how many of us can make up to the Big Ten, but at least it keeps you know where the green light is, the red light, the yellow light. Keeps you on track, doesn't it? Well, I guess all this did for me was say, you know what, Mike? Maybe you ought to really get back to a little God talk on your show and a little God talk in your head, because you've been a little off key here lately, you know. And that's it. That's all I saw last night. God only knows what my fingers will flip to tonight in the Bible. Well, here's one from Isaiah, actually one of my favorite ones. This is specifically for the Brits. The show of their countenance doth witness against them, and they declare their sin is Sodom. They hide it not. Woe unto their soul, for they have wrought evil unto themselves. Pretty interesting. England has some great cathedrals. I wonder if they actually listen to what they mumbo-jumbo in those cathedrals anymore.
Savage.